Merkle Media.
I guess it's time to go back in time.
Are you telling me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Time is but a stubborn illusion.
I have a lot of memories of the past.
People are time traveling within themselves.
Time travel is possible.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. Well, the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow this head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg, and I look over, and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reach my hand into this bush, and I touch air. Couldn't breathe, and I couldn't move, because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Okay, I'm reloaded!
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to The Confessionals. I am your host, Tony Merkle. Thank you for being here. This is a bonus episode that is brought to you very unexpectedly, but at times things happen in life where you need to do certain things for other people, and this show is a direct reflection of that. You see, today I got a message on Twitter from a guy named Kevin who reached out to me several times before. He loves the show, and he told me that today, this week, he's been listening to the show, and it's been helping him get through the hardest time of his life. You see, Kevin unexpectedly lost his 17-year-old son this week to an accident. And Kevin, man, I don't know what you're going through. All I can do is imagine how you feel. And I gotta tell you, man, I feel for you. I feel for your family. And I really hope that you guys pull through strong on this one. I want you to know that I'm going to be keeping you in my prayers. I'm going to be keeping your family in my prayers. And I hope that everybody that listens to the sound of my voice right now does the same exact thing. Because no parent should ever have to go through what you're going through right now, man. And I want you to know that here at The Confessionals, there's a whole community, thousands of people that listen to this show and know about your situation and that they're pulling for you. They're pulling for your family. You guys aren't in this alone. We're in it together with you. And Kevin, since you've been listening to the show to keep your mind off things, that's what this show's about. This show goes out to you, Kevin. You and your family. So today we have Austin coming on, who is actually a returning guest from episode 111, The Abduction Cover-Up. Many people remember that show, and I'm sure many people loved that show because I got lots of messages on it. And so I thought today would be a great day to give you guys a sequel to it. I sat down with Austin, and he gave me some updates as to what has happened since the last time we talked. And we also go into paranormal experiences that he's had throughout his life. And so, without any further delay, let's get to Austin. Austin, how you doing, man?
Doing well, man. Thanks for having me back.
I'm glad you're here. So if anybody is new to the show or doesn't recognize Austin's voice, we did a show with Austin a couple months ago, and his show was the abduction cover-up that actually kind of involved the confessionals a little bit too. And people really were drawn in by the story, Austin, that you had to share, and then how it also involved the show. And since then, you have uncovered certain things about your experiences that really set you off, and it kind of pushed you back a little bit. So what we're going to do today is we're going to kind of put an ending period note on your experiences, and we're just going to let you kind of share any kind of follow-up information you feel comfortable sharing. And I think after you're done sharing this, the audience will understand that why you feel uncomfortable talking about it now. So if you want, I know if you want, you can kind of just go into how you went into getting more information. And I know you've been dealing with a sickness that you also believe has been part of this, right?
Yeah, man, that's correct. So to kind of tie up on the sickness thing, I'm finally kind of recovering from that within the past week and a half, maybe 2 weeks at the most. But since the day before I talked to you, which I believe our interview was like February 2nd, I believe, and the night before that on the 1st, I started getting really sick. And it was just for a period of between like 8 to 9 p.m. till about 6 in the morning where I'd just be violently sick. And that's continued on since talking to you every night. Like, I'm completely fine during the day. But I ended up losing about 45 pounds since that initial, February 1st, since it initially started up until about a week and a half ago. So finally recovering a little bit from that. You know, I've been to the doctors. They've never been able to pinpoint anything. It was not a viral infection or bacterial infection, nothing like that. So it's been crazy, man.
Yeah, I can understand it's been crazy, dude. I can't imagine going through a sickness thinking that it's not just something normal where the doctors can diagnose it, but it might be something else that you might have brought on yourself for not, you know, staying in line kind of thing. And we had Carrie Berner on the show, who is the ex-Catholic nun, who was talking about just what this, where, you know, she had nanotechnology placed in her body and she had to go through this stuff to actually get it out of her body. And it's not like something you can just go to a doctor and they give you, you know, some prescription for. It's something that she had to figure out on her own. And hopefully, you know, it doesn't get to that point for you and stuff. I'm glad it's starting to turn around for you, but it's a shame that you went through it to begin with.
I've replayed it all in my mind. Yeah, I can't help but think it was a mistake to not just, you know, stay in line and keep my mouth shut. But at the same time, I don't regret coming forward and talking to you about it and sharing it. But it's definitely a scary thing I never would have imagined happening.
Yeah, I don't think many people would imagine it happening to them. It still doesn't feel like, I've had people email me and say I have to watch my back and things like that. And I don't feel like that, even though maybe I should. I don't feel like that. And maybe it's because I deal with this kind of stuff a lot. Like, you're not the only person I talk to. I've talked to several people over the past few years that are more sensitive information kind of things. And some of the stuff wasn't even on the air, but just the fact that they talked to me about it made me feel a little uncomfortable. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I don't know if I should be looking over my shoulder or not, but I really don't a lot of times. It's just because maybe I've just gotten used to things. I've just gotten used to this as my new normal. But yeah, man, I'm sorry that you had to go through that. Why don't you share with the audience a little bit of how you came about to maybe further understanding your experiences and how it kind of scared you to the point where you don't feel comfortable talking about it to people. In fact, just so the audience knows, since you went through some things to get more information, you haven't told me anything. All you told me is that you don't feel comfortable talking about it. And so whatever you feel like comfortable sharing today and stuff, go for it. And if I ask you a question that you don't feel comfortable talking about, just let me know.
All right, man. So like I said, you know, that interview was on the 2nd, I believe, which was a Saturday. And then on the 6th, I believe it was, I quit, you know, keeping tabs of notes and everything. I just kind of wanted to block it all out after this. But on the 6th, I got to work. And of course, you know, we talked about the whole deal with them, you know, removing my license and everything, and what a pain in the ass that was. So I got to work. And just a couple hours into the day, we were in like our 8 o'clock meeting, and we were going over, you know, the plan for the following day, and the volume or the number of cases that we were supposed to do was going to come in really light. So I'm on the Sunday through Wednesday crew. So the next day would have been a Thursday, and they elected that I wouldn't really need to stay the rest of that Wednesday, and I wouldn't need to come in on Thursday and get actual a few days off for the first time in forever. And so she went ahead and cut me loose right after the 8 a.m. meeting. So I called my ride to come pick me back up, you know, for the inconvenience, you know, and everything of just dropping me off a couple hours earlier. And as I was sitting there waiting, you know, I thought, I'm going to try to go ahead and reach out to, you know, another, you know, a specialist to try to see if I can get in for a hypnosis thing. And I believe that I had already set it up prior, and it was going to be a couple of days later. I think I had it set up for that Friday, but I asked, since I was getting off early and was going to be coming back through town, if I could just go ahead and get in. And he said, yeah, no problem. So I went ahead and did that. I shot you the message letting you know that what I was getting ready to go do. And, you know, when I went in there, it was kind of like a brief rundown of why I was there, what I was hoping to, you know, to get out of it. And, we kind of went into it, and, you know, some of the information that I got, it was probably some of the most disturbing, things that I'd ever heard. And, it was really troubling. I had a really hard time with it. I came home afterwards and really just kind of sat on it for a while, for a few hours, I believe, trying to let it all sink in, what had just happened and what I had, you know, what I had said and you know, the things that I was remembering. And it was really, really, really troubling. It really shook me up to think that I was a part of that and the things that I had done while I was, you know, in this whole program. It bothered me, and I didn't want to talk about it anymore. Just for the fact that I was having such a hard time with it. And I know we had talked, you know, previously about, you know, the similarities between myself and Tony Rodriguez. And, you know, for the audience, if you haven't heard his story, it's absolutely fascinating. Go check it out. But him and I were on completely opposite ends of the spectrum as far as, you know, our job duties. You know, he went through terrible things as a child. And then once he got, you know, into that program, he was more or less a slave, just kind of, you know, almost like a mechanic, you know, if I remember right. I don't know, Tony, do you remember that? He like worked on ships and stuff.
He was more hands-on kind of guy, and right. Even bait sometimes. He would be put out in the field as bait.
Yeah, so I was on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, and I'm going to try to, you know, choose my words carefully here. So for the audience, I'm sorry. I don't want to go into too much detail. It's going to put me in, you know, further jeopardy, but I do want to give some closure on this. Him and I were on completely opposite ends of the spectrum. I was, you know, I'd made it pretty well high up into the ranking, and some of the things, you know, I was initially or essentially responsible for using guys like Tony Rodriguez as bait out into the field. And the things that I saw, different life forms, and the things that were done to them and to our own people, I feel very, very responsible for. And it really bothers me. I get kind of emotional just thinking about it, that I was capable or responsible for that. So that's when I initially, you know, sent you the message saying, I'm really disturbed by it and I just kind of want to let it go. And then that night, that same night on the 6th, my wife was in a car accident on her way home from work. And I do not find that, as a coincidence whatsoever. She had called me, saying that she had been in a wreck. She was hit by a GMC SUV, like a Suburban. And initially, the SUVs that were following me were Tahoes. So this was a GMC Suburban, and she was T-boned. Her Explorer was totaled, and luckily she wasn't hurt, you know, too bad. But by the time I was able to get a ride over here and to go help her, the people were already gone that were the other party in it. And the police were of no help as far as the other party was concerned. They wouldn't answer questions that I had or that my wife had. And that was the kind of the last straw there as far as my willingness to go forward talking about it. I don't want to put myself or my family in any further danger.
Yeah, I can understand that. The way they were not cooperating and stuff, I mean, were they like not cooperating in the sense that even the legal side of things they weren't abiding by? I mean, I'm assuming you would have had a legally been entitled to insurance information, right?
You would think so. Whenever myself and my mother-in-law showed up over there to go get her, I asked her, what happened, you know, what kind of vehicle was it? She said it was a big, you know, extended GMC SUV, which would have been the Suburban or Denali, whatever. And she said that a black one T-boned her. It was still sitting over there. It had pulled off into an adjacent parking lot, and the license plates were not on it. There were no license plates on it. The front end on it was smashed up a little bit, but it definitely did a hell of a lot more damage to my wife's vehicle. And then she said shortly thereafter, about 5 minutes later, a second black GMC SUV showed up, picked that person up. And once the police arrived, the two of them briefly spoke to the police officer, the local police officer, and left the scene. And my wife was forced to stay there and answered all these questions. It was not her fault, but she was placed at fault. And that was really the end of it, you know. And I was asking the police officer questions as regards to where are they at, why weren't they forced to stay, but she is. Did you get their information? Can I get a copy of it? You know, things like that. And I was basically told it. I wasn't even involved in the accident. So I have no further reason to even be there. And they wanted to deal with my wife and her alone. But she was never able to get their insurance information. She had got the police report, and it basically said that she was at fault. She pulled out in front of them. But where the accident had happened, she was pulling out of a gas station parking lot. And this SUV ran through a stoplight that is about a block down. And, you know, my wife was just kind of pulling out or whatever. And she said that they had gunned it and T-boned the back end of her car, hit the passenger or the rear driver's side door, and just completely crushed it.
So do you think that they were aiming for her and missed, or you think they were aiming for that spot and just to send a message?
No, I think they were aiming for her. She said she realized that she was getting ready to be hit. Like, she initially was kind of just rolling out and getting ready to turn left on the and head home from the gas station parking lot. And she realized that truck or that SUV was gaining speed and was going to hit her. So she had kind of gunned it to try to avoid it. Luckily, she did it just in time to kind of propel herself forward a little bit, or she would have been extremely hurt or, you know, even killed.
Wow. Well, I'm glad she is okay and was able to walk away from it. But it sounds to me like whoever is doing this or did that talked to the police officer, flashed some kind of authoritative paperwork or something like that, and said, there's no questions to be asked here. We're going to be leaving. And the police officer's like, okay, you know, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how she had kind of described it to me. She's like, they walked up to the police officer, handed him something, and she said it was just a matter of, you know, 10-second exchange, and they just up and left. And shortly after that, I believe it was either the next day or the day after, so maybe the 7th or the 8th, I had gotten a phone call from that same short 2384 that had been calling me previously that we had discussed in the last episode. And it was basically, you know, this is what happens type of discussion.
I understand.
So, I mean, that was kind of, you know, it, as far as it went for me. It was, you know, clearly I'm outmatched here. So,
yeah. And I understand your hesitations to go any further. In fact, that's one of the things where sometimes I have people asking me or telling me that they're disappointed that I don't, you know, dig on certain things, or I've referenced sometimes in the show that there's some things that I know that I'm not willing to talk about. For instance, there's political figureheads. I'm not going to say anything out past that, that I have some serious, serious information on from several credible sources. And I can't talk about it, because if I talk about it, it's going to put a target on my back. And I got a family just like you. And I think about that. I think about what happens if something happens to me and my son grows up not knowing his dad. Those are real things. You know what I mean? And so it's easy to sit there. Yeah. It's easy to sit there and listen to somebody's story and be like, oh, why don't you ask this question? Or, well, you say that you know this, but you won't tell us. And it's your responsibility to tell us. It's like, listen, I am telling you. I'm telling you exactly what I'm comfortable telling you, because if I go any further, there could be serious repercussions, and I'm not willing to cross certain lines. I'm willing to toe a lot of lines. I mean, people have seen that on the show. I really don't care about people's feelings a whole lot. I don't care what your philosophies are, your religion, anything like that. I'll say certain things, and I don't care. But when it comes to putting me or my family in harm's way, that's just a line I'm not willing to cross. So I respect what your decisions are here. With that said, you had told us that whatever you found out disturbed you a lot, because you were basically on the opposite end of Tony Rodriguez. And if anybody's listening that hasn't heard that episode, I believe it's episode 91, The Alien Abducted Time Traveler. That's the episode we're referencing. And I wanted to ask you, and you may not know the answer to this, so you were on the other end of the spectrum, kind of in charge of people, things like that, and it really disturbed you that you were able to understand or at least see what you were capable of or what you were doing. Is that something that you know of, that were you willingly by choice doing these things, or was it something that, like, yeah, you did it, but because you pretty much had to?
I had to. So in the classroom and, you know, throughout all of my training and everything, I excelled. I kind of separated myself from everyone else that was in the program with me, and tested extremely high in every aspect. And they kind of fast-tracked me up the ranks, if you will. And, you know, I was not proud to say it, because this is completely opposite of how I am today. But I was essentially just a yes man and did whatever I was told to do. And that makes me absolutely sick to even say that, because it's, like I said, it's so completely opposite of how I am today. And maybe that's why, you know, there's some subconscious thing, you know, after I was put back or something. But I've never been a yes man. I'm very firm in, you know, the things that I believe in and my morals and everything like that. And I absolutely will not break. And so it was troubling to me that I was so willing to do whatever was asked, knowing damn good and well how wrong and immoral that they were.
Well, maybe that's kind of a contributing factor, subliminally at least, as to why you are the way you are now. You know, people go through life and they go through experiences that shape and mold them. And I always tell people that you're not going to be the same person you are today, 10 years from now. Just like, Austin, how old are you?
31.
31. All right. So I'm going to use you as an example. When you were 21 years old, you were a completely different man than you are today. I can guarantee you that. That's the same story with everybody. Yeah. People change over time. And when you're 41, you're going to be even different. And hopefully that difference is a good difference. And I always use that example when I tell people that you need to control the change in your life. Like, you're going to change no matter what. And you can either change by default and just become whoever you become, or you can control that change and strive to be the person you want to be. And I say all that to say your experience, I think, probably shaped and molded you as to who you are today. And whether you initially remembered it up front or not, I think in the back of your mind, clearly you had something in the back of your mind of these memories of sorts, and they probably influenced your decisions that you make today. And so you probably learned from your experience. You know, you didn't like who you were and you changed. Whether that change was because you remembered or because there's just something inside of you that pushed you in that direction from your experience, because obviously it was a traumatizing thing for you. Man, I'm sorry you went through it. And is there anything else you'd like to share before we move on?
Not right off the top of my head, but I do want to apologize. You know, as we were talking about, you know, the audience asking questions, I really wish that there was more that I could, delve into this with and give everybody the information, that I know they would love to hear and, would kind of make more sense with everything. And thank you to all of them that reached out to me. I've got several messages where they enjoyed the show and, you know, asking questions and things like that. That was really cool. But, you know, just please try to understand that there's a family involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully the audience understands it. I'm sure they will. They're very understanding people. And, you know, the people that listen to these kinds of shows, they understand that this stuff is real and it affects real people. And there is real consequences to some of the things that happen with these people, including yourself and their experiences. So Austin, I appreciate you sharing what you could with us. And I want to kind of shift the whole conversation here because when we first started talking, it was initially about your paranormal experiences, and then it kind of veered off into the direction we just came from. And so I want to take the next, you know, 30 minutes or so to let you share these experiences that you had. You grew up in a haunted house, and I guess the haunting affected everybody, but mainly it affected you the most, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So, I mean, everybody that ever set foot in that house had some experience. But hands down, I took the brunt of the activity for whatever reason. But that is the first, real memory that I even have is a paranormal experience. So kind of a little background leading up to it. My parents divorced when I was really young, about 3 years old. And not to sound like a pity party or anything, but kind of just a little backstory how this kind of leads up. I have one memory of my mother and father being together, and they were having an argument, and my sister and I were playing with you remember those old Light Bright toys?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I never had one, and I was always jealous that I didn't have one.
Yeah. So my sister and I were playing with one of those. She was a few years older than me. And I remember listening to our mom and dad arguing and everything. So they had decided they were going to take us to our grandmother's, which is his mom, our dad's mom. And we were going to spend the night over there while they tried to, you know, fix their issues and everything. And so the following morning, when our parents came to pick us up, I had folded, or my grandmother had folded my pajamas up, and there was a pull-out couch in the room adjacent to the living room. It was essentially just a big playroom, and it had a pull-out couch in there. She had folded my pajamas up, placed them on the edge of the bed, and you know, my grandmother was talking to my mom, and I remember being in that room and seeing, like, watching my pajamas lifting up off of the bed and just in thin air, just gone, like they're floating through the air. And this was a very old home. It was a very open floor plan, like the entire rooms, all the rooms downstairs were either connected by a doorway or there were pocket doors separating them. And my pajamas were floating through my grandmother's room, which was connected to that playroom by pocket doors. And they floated through her room, and I followed them. And they turned the corner and headed up this very steep staircase. And I'm sitting there watching them, like, and I'm starting to go up the stairs, like, you know, 3 years old, I'm sure. I was thinking, what the hell's going on? But my mom, you know, she was like, where's your pajamas? Get your stuff. And I'm like, they're up here. You know, like, they just went up there. And we couldn't find them. And we didn't find them for about a month. And then we happened to go spend the night back over there again. And they were put out in the exact same spot that they up and vanished from. And that was my first, like, real memory, complete memory, being, you know, 3 years old and seeing that.
Wow. So you had some poltergeist activity going on around you at 3 years old, seeing things move around you and stuff. It can be very unnerving, I'm assuming, if you know what's going on. But at 3 years old, did you comprehend that that wasn't normal?
No, I had, like, I knew, like, this, something is moving them, but nothing is there. Something's not right. But I didn't know anything about ghosts. I didn't understand, you know, spirits and, you know, the paranormal realm and everything like that. So, I mean, I was just willingly following it, like, you know, hey, you know, that's my stuff. But as I got older, so my parents split up shortly thereafter, and my sister and I chose to live with our father. And you know, my mom and dad, like, stayed really good friends and everything, which was amazing to see. Like, that's how it should be. They worked really well together. They were never in court fighting over custody and child support and things like that. You know, they wanted to, you know, us to choose where we wanted to be. So, you know, we chose to live with him, to stay in, you know, the same school and with our friends and everything. So that's what we did. And my grandmother's health started declining really rapidly. She was pretty well bedridden. She could get up and, you know, go make dinner and things like that, but then she'd be right back in bed. And so we moved in there to so he could kind of look after her as well and help her with everything. So that's the house that that I grew up in. And the activity really just kind of escalated there. So I've kind of picked out some, you know, some of the more, intense, you know, things to go over.
Okay.
But, you know, so timeline wise, it kind of just all runs together. So I was there from, roughly, 3 years old to, the time I was 14, and then I moved with my mother to go to high school where she was living. And you know, so for 11 years this was almost an everyday thing, and that's not an exaggeration on any on any front. A good week for me where I was left alone and didn't deal with this stuff. If it was a good week, there may be one or two days where nothing happened to me. Wow. In a week. So, yeah. I know I discussed, you know, in the last episode that if I was home, you know, I was outside playing, and that's why I whenever I get home from school, I'd drop my things off, and then go straight outside, and I'd be outside until dinner time, and then I'd be back outside until I had to come in and get cleaned up and ready for bed, just in hopes of not having to deal with it. So that was kind of the backstory there, but, you know, some of the more intense things that happened. So, I would be laying in bed. Countless times, where I'd be laying in my room, upstairs, and, the covers, I could feel the covers like being pulled off of me. That happened, I don't know how many times. So kind of more on the layout of the house, upstairs, like I always felt like I knew where this thing was at. Like I could just feel it, and I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about that feeling. But I would always know when something was getting ready to happen, and I would always know where it is, even if I was, and it was, you know, 90% of the time it was upstairs. But like I said, it was a really steep staircase. And, once you kind of come up, there's like a half wall thing right in front of the top of the staircase. To the immediate right of the staircase at the top was my sister's room. To the left where that partial wall was at was like a big open, living room area. And then to, the left of that was, like an enormous bedroom that was, you know, for the better part of my childhood was my dad and my room because it was so big. Like it took up almost the entire length of the house. So he kind of had the front room, the front part of it. And I had the back part. Well, the back part was kind of almost like an A-frame type, how the drywall was. And my bed was kind of up underneath that part. So, and it had like, you've seen those old houses that have like those little, maybe 3 foot, little storage room door. It's not like a full, you know, stand up walkthrough door. It's almost like a little half door, if you will.
Kind of like a cubby space.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. So my bed was right up against that, that door. And, you know, I would feel my covers being pulled off of me, you know, countless times, at least a couple times a week, for 11 years. And, one night I was laying in bed, I was awake and I could feel something was getting ready to happen. And it was just like, you hear about the fight or flight thing, but I feel like there's a third, like where you just freeze. And sometimes I would just freeze. And this was one of those times where I'm laying there, I know something's getting ready to happen. And then I just happened to look over and it was as if it's, man, this sounds so crazy to say out loud, but like I could see it behind the wallpaper and it crawled up behind the wallpaper, up through the A-frame structure, in the drywall, down the other side of my bed, right next to me, and what I assumed disappeared into that little cubby space. And it freaked me out like beyond measure, but I couldn't scream. I couldn't do anything. I was just frozen. And I just remember closing my eyes and thinking, you know, for the love of God, like, please just leave me alone. I just want to go to sleep. And, that night, I woke up in that cubby hole, but I couldn't open the door to get out because my bed was blocking it. So somehow my bed was moved. I was moved, put into that cubby hole, and my bed was moved back in front of that door. And my dad could hear me pounding on the door and screaming because it's pitch black in there. I think I was like maybe 7 at the time when this one happened. And you know, he's, you know, yelling at me like it's my fault. Like, how the hell would I move the bed back in front of the door from inside the room? But I would always tell him, you know, the things that I would see and the things that would happen. And he had a really hard time dealing with, or, you know, reacting to it or knowing how to react to things like that. The same deal with the whole, you know, experience that I had, you know, that we had talked about. He didn't know how to react to that. Who does? So, I mean, I'm not mad at him for it, but he would almost try to play it as if I was crazy or something. But then, you know, just a couple of years ago, he finally opened up and told me that he had stuff happen to him too, but he didn't want to tell me that to freak me out. But he let me go on, you know, all my life thinking that I was nuts or that those things weren't really happening or it was just the wind was one of his favorite excuses. So that one was probably the most, well, I don't want to even say the most intense. But that one was a big one that really kind of was traumatizing. I don't want to shotgun these. So if you need to interrupt me and ask questions or anything, by all means, go ahead.
Well, no, I wanted to ask you, so when you wound up in that crawl space, cubby hole, whatever it was, you don't remember going in there. You don't know how you got in there, but somehow you got in there with the bed blocking the door to get out, right?
Correct.
Do you think that this is something that, because there's several different options you can go with this, where it's like you could have gone into a trance and went in there and then something moved the bed. Do you think that there was some kind of teleportation involved here? I mean, because we know how your life has been, I don't want to put anything past your experiences, because even seeing the stuff floating up the stairs, your pajamas and stuff, I was sitting here thinking, okay, it sounds like a paranormal experience, but knowing your life story, it makes me wonder if there is some kind of technology that these people have to use around you to mess with you. You know, like, why would they want to mess with you? I don't know, but just putting out ideas and thoughts, because knowing your backstory, sometimes I wonder, is it paranormal or is it somebody messing with you, making it look paranormal? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm very, very open-minded. And I've thought about that as well, you know, if it was all connected or, you know, what it could be. But I mean, that's why I stay open about it, because I absolutely have no idea. I don't know how the hell that happened. So I can't definitively say. I do feel like it was paranormal, and I'll kind of, as we go along here, that it makes me feel that way for sure. But, you know, an instance like that where I'm physically moved, I can definitely see, you know, the other alternative being an option as well. But my aunt, my father's sister, she's since passed away. She was a totally hateful person. We absolutely hated her being around. She was from up around the South Bend area, and she would come down every so often, and it was just the worst, man. Whenever she would come down, you know, most of the time we'd go stay at a hotel for the week if she was going to be staying for a week. And, yeah, she was sweet. And, she came down, and this was one, rare instance where we stayed, and she always favored my sister. My sister and I were never really close, like since she was, I think she's 4 years older than me. You know, her and I were never really close, for whatever reason. She was always kind of jealous of me. She thought that my dad favored me or whatever. I don't know. But so my aunt really kind of favored her. And I woke up one evening with my sister standing over me with my aunt's little knitting sticks things, you know, little
sharp stuff,
pointy things. Yeah. So she's standing over me with those, and she's got them like jabbed into my throat. And, I may have been, it's probably about the same time period. I was probably about 7. And, so my sister would have been about 11. And, yes, I remember like yelling for my dad, and my sister's got this crazy look in her eye and got these things to my throat. And I'm like piercing the skin a little bit, like I was bleeding. And, you know, so my dad, you know, whooped her ass, you know, because you could back in those days. And my sister said that my aunt made her do it. So my aunt, which we ended up finding out, dabbled in the occult. And I found this out when I was like 19. I came back to visit my grandma, and my aunt had moved in with her at the time. So I found out then that my aunt had dabbled in the occult for the majority of her life, and that she did not care much for me whenever I was little. For whatever reason, I never did anything to her. Her and I had talked about that. She said, yeah, she did that. She made my sister, told my sister to do that. And she also conjured up a entity to torment me. And I remember this one. This one was like hands down the most intense thing that happened. So this old house, man, it had a basement under it that was just, you know, wet and musty smelling. Like I always hated going down there every once in a while, you know, like in the spring or something when a tornado alarm would go off, we'd have to go down there. And I always hated it. I was kind of creeped out by it. But this instance, my grandma had me go down there for something. I can't even remember what it was. But as I got down there, I just got those cold chills, and I know something's here with me. I don't like it, and something's getting ready to happen. I'm not ready for it. This is not a good feeling. And down there, my grandma had like a row or two rows of like the old aluminum lawn chairs, you know, like with like that nylon weaving. You remember those?
Yeah.
So she had a couple of rows down there leaned up against the wall. And I remember turning around and I look at it and I see this shadow figure standing between the two rows, and both rows come flying out at me, like across the basement floor. And I remember like dropping down, like back up against the wall, like sliding down to, you know, sit on my butt and like just cover my face with my hands. And I'm just like freaking out. I remember screaming and, yelling for my grandma to come down there. My dad wasn't home. And she couldn't really get around very much. But I mean, that was probably the freakiest thing. And just hearing it all crashing and, you know, hitting me and sliding up against me and everything. That was probably the most intense thing that happened, because I saw it like visually, like I'm looking right at it. And I see its hands move and the rows of chairs come flying at me.
Yeah, that'd be frightening. Absolutely frightening. Did your aunt tell you why she despised you so much? Like, did she really go into the details as to why she had it out for you?
No, so I asked her, and like, you know, we discussed before, man, I was a good kid. I was good in school, huge into sports, man. I was always playing baseball, basketball, football, whatever, and never in any trouble. And I've never always really nice to everybody, you know, always treated everybody, you know, the way that I wanted to be treated. Especially, you know, my elders and everything. That's just how I was raised. You know, treat your elders with respect. And so I was always nice to her. But, you know, she never said. She's just like, I just didn't like you. She's like, just didn't care much for you. It's like, you know, I loved your sister. It's like, why? She's a bitch.
Wow. But, she tells your sister to do that. Did your sister do it? Like, okay, my aunt told me to do this, so I'm going to do it? Or was it something like, you know, more mystical as to why or how she did it? I mean, like, I can't imagine
like she's
my
under a spell or something.
Yeah, because I have a younger sister. She's 5 years younger than me. And there were times I was not a good big brother when I was younger. I just wasn't a nice person. And even though I was such a mean person, my sister never would have agreed to do something like that. And so, like, I just can't fathom the fact that your sister would just be like, okay, I'll do it, aunt, whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that just really, I don't think she was under any kind of spell or anything, man. I mean, that's just, you know, like I said, man, we were never close. And she was extremely jealous of me for whatever reason. My dad never treated her any different than me. So I don't know where she came up with all that stuff, but I know, like, I mean, I heard it from as far back as I can remember. Like, she doesn't, she would, you know, openly tell me that she doesn't want me around. She never wanted a little brother anyway, you know, those kinds of things. So I think she was more than willing to do it. That's just the type of person she was. She was a terrible, like, especially once she got into her teenage years, she was an absolute horror. But, I mean, I guess it's entirely possible that she was, you know, under some sort of spell or something, but I firmly believe that she's just that willing to do it.
Yeah. You know, you said that your aunt dabbled in the occult most of her life. I'm like, that's probably not dabbling. You know? That's more of a commitment.
Yeah. Yeah. She was in it. And, you know, she told me this all when I was about 19. I think she passed away when I was about 20. But she had openly told me that, yeah, she, anytime that she would come here, she would do her best to conjure something up to torment me. And I believe that what was down in the basement was one of those entities.
Jeez. Well, I'm sorry you had to go through that, man.
Yeah, yeah, man, it was something else. So I've always had this like strange fascination, like especially now as I'm older, and things have happened involving my kids that I share with you too. But
yeah.
I've had this strange fascination with it, you know, ever since I moved out of that house and moved in with my mom to go to high school where she was living. Like I almost like wish I would have handled it or reacted differently to certain things. And then, you know, I feel like that now. And then when I've had my experiences as an adult, it's just like, there's no way like you can control how you react to something that's not there doing something. You know what I mean? That something's moving or whatever the case may be.
Right.
That there's no logical explanation for, like, there's no manual or no training yourself how to react to it or something. I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things that catches you so off guard. But I remember, I was probably about 10 at this point, and Super Nintendo was the rage, you know, back then. And Super Mario Kart was out, and I've been tearing that up with all the neighborhood kids. And I remember thinking, like, I'm not going to be a little girl about this. Like, I'm going to go home. I'm going upstairs. I'm going to play Super Mario Kart after work, giving myself a pep talk, you know, giving myself the business all day at school. And, because I felt like, you know, like I said, the majority of the time, everything was upstairs, and there was a storage room shed in between my dad's portion of the room and mine in the back half. And I always felt like that's where it stays or whatever, if that makes any sense. But I'm sitting there on the edge of my bed, and I'm playing Mario Kart, and I remember pausing the game and just being completely covered in goosebumps. And it's like, oh God, you know, something's getting ready to happen again. Like I remember closing my eyes. It's like, I don't even want to open them. I don't want to see what's about ready to happen. And I just remember just like almost like shaking my head and just like, damn it, you know. Like, this is what I get for trying to be brave, you know. And I remember opening my eyes and seeing that storage room door open really slowly. Like, I remember hearing the metal doorknob turning on it, hearing it creak open, and then the thing slam shut, like, as I'm watching it, just, like, a few feet away from me. And I remember that was one of the flight reactions where I just up and booked it downstairs. And my dad, you know, trying to tell me it was the wind. And I remember that happening quite a bit, you know, where doors and things would open and shut right in front of me. chairs would pull out in front of the kitchen, like walking into the kitchen, chairs would pull out from the table right in front of you, like cutting you off. The microwave would open and shut and turn itself on. Water turn itself on and off, lights, all that good stuff. So yeah, that was the majority of it. And pictures hanging up on the wall, like you couldn't hang anything straight. You could sit there and straighten the picture back up, and then you could take a step back, and then it was almost as if you could see something hit the bottom of it, and it would just like kind of get it kind of cockeyed a little bit. As you could just sit there and do that all day long, and then as soon as you'd step back, it would hit, and you could see the corner of it bump up, the bottom corner, and it'd go back to being crooked.
You know, it sounds like whatever this was more often than not a menace than anything. I mean, what's the point of opening a door slowly then slamming it shut? What's the point of pulling a chair out in front of you? What's the point of making the pictures crooked? It seems like it's just being a menace, trying to get a reaction.
Yeah, so probably, well, it was right shortly before I moved out and moved to my mom's. So I was 14, and I remember just like having a breakdown, like to my dad. It's like, I'm not like, no, it's not the wind. Like, quit telling me this. And this is like one of the very few times that I ever like raised my voice at my dad. But it's just like, you're not listening to me. You're trying to pawn it off like it's something that it's not. Like, I just listen to me and hear me out. Because, you know, like I said, at this point, you know, he had never told me anything that he had an experience. In my mind, at that point, he was the only person that has ever been in this house that nothing's ever happened to, which didn't make sense to me. And so he would always try to tell me it was a win. And I remember like raising my voice at him, like, you know, damn it. No, it's not. You know, like, how's the wind going to, I can see how it would open it, but it's just going to reverse direction and slam it shut, you know, five times harder than how it was opened, you know, things like that. And, but I remember having a breakdown to him, like, I can't handle this anymore. I'm going to high school with mom. I'm going to move with mom. And, I can't keep doing this. And I had the first lucid dream. Is that what it's called? Or vivid dream, lucid dream, whatever. So, I had the very first one of those that I ever had. And this sounds so crazy to say it, but this man in a military uniform took me to Disney World, and he was telling me that he was my grandfather, my dad's dad, and that he knows, like, he was listening to me talk to my dad, and he feels absolutely horrible that he's frightened me, and his only intentions upon doing things like that, turning the lights on, opening the doors, things like that, were him letting me know that he was there. Well, I never met him. My grandfather passed away when my dad was 8 years old, and my dad barely remembers him. There were no pictures up in the house of him. I had no clue what this dude looked like. And I remember him saying, like, I brought you here to know, so you know that you're safe and that I'm not going to hurt you. I just want you to know that I'm around and that I look after you. And that was what he told me in my dream about the thing that I saw in the basement, that there are entities in the house that are trying to hurt me, and he's trying to help me keep them away. And he will no longer do the things that he's been doing that scared me so much. And from that point on, I never had another experience for the last few months that I finished school up there with my dad and moved with my mom. But I remember waking up and telling my dad, like, I saw this guy. He claims that he's your dad. And, my dad was kind of freaked out. He's like, what was he wearing? And I described his uniform to him. And my dad went in that storage room, dug around in some of his things, and pulled out my grandfather's military photograph. And it was hands down, that was who I saw.
Wow. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it was nuts.
So,
but that was the last thing that ever happened to me there. Go ahead. I think you're getting to ask something.
Yeah, I wanted to just ask you what your grandfather did in the military. Was he just a general military guy, or did he do anything special? I mean, I'm just asking for obvious reasons.
I have no idea, man. I have no idea. And my dad doesn't know. My grandma, she never told me anything about him. So I believe I had even, mentioned that to you in a message that I sent you about this whole other, you know, the 20 and back experience or whatever you want to call it of mine, where it's like, well, maybe he was something in the military and they kind of kept tabs on his family, so to speak, or something. And that's how I was chosen. I don't know. I'm open to that, but I mean, I have no information about my grandfather at all.
Well, it makes me wonder just, you know, how involved your grandfather was and, you know, what'd your grandfather die from?
A heart attack. And he was relatively young, man. And, I said my dad was only 8 at the time and he wasn't around much. So my dad has like zero memory of him at all, which is weird, you know, for my dad being 8, like he has no memory of his dad at all.
Wow. You know, it's just one of those things where it makes you wonder if there's anything tied in there with your experiences of being chosen for a 20 back and then also rising in the ranks and all that kind of stuff. But that's all, you know, speculation. There's no reasons to expound on that thought. But you mentioned that I guess your kids have been having experiences and stuff. What do you mean by that?
So my ex-wife and I, we had this place, we rented this house probably, 3 hours or so south of here. And, when we first moved in there, like we had to clean it up. Like the people that moved out kind of just, it was like they left everything and, just took off. And so we offered to clean it up as like no down or no security deposit, you know, one of those type of things. We'll clean it up. We'll fix it up. Just we'll pay you the first month's rent and don't worry about the security deposit. So they were all for it, you know, so they didn't have to do the work. And so when we moved in, like there were, there was like this medicine type thing that were in cans that were almost like little Pediasure type things. So we looked it up, the name of it, and it was for like cancer patients and things like that. I remember a few cases of that stuff being left, under the sink. And, we didn't think much of it. We just did what we had to do, cleaned it out, repainted it, cleaned the carpets, all that good stuff. And we just had our oldest son at the time. He had either just turned 4 or was getting ready to turn 4. And my ex-wife was pregnant with our second son. She was getting ready to have him at any point. And when we first moved in, our oldest son, like his room, like he didn't want any part of it. He didn't want to go back there. He didn't want to sleep in there. He didn't want to play in there. Like nothing. He wanted no part of that room whatsoever. And then after our second son was born, that completely flipped. We couldn't get him out of the room, but he started acting really different. Like he had an attitude. Every time I would even go back in there and try to like get him to come play or something. Always been real hands-on with my kids, you know, really active with them. I'd try to get him to come out, come play, wrestle around, whatever. And he would like push me out of his room and shut the door. And he started telling me that Corey doesn't want you in here. And I started asking, well, who's Corey? And So he started telling me that it was this thing, and that it was this black shadow figure, and it had red eyes. And every time that he would tell us this, like, nothing changed. The description stayed the same, all that stuff. So we kind of started digging into it, and we found out that some guy, a kid, he was like 18 years old, named Corey. So I can't remember his last name now, but he had passed away, and he lived there. And our son had told us that he died in a fire. So we kind of dug around, tried to figure out what happened to this kid. Well, he wrecked his car coming home from like a church camp thing, and he was trapped in it, and the car caught on fire. So that kind of freaked us out, and it's like, okay, there's obviously something like legit going on in here. I'm a firm believer in it from the shit that I experienced growing up, that like he's not lying. Like, how would he know that, you know? So we ended up, we're talking about it, like, how are we going to deal with this? Like, she wanted to move, but we just couldn't afford to at the time. And so it's like, how are we going to deal with this? And I remember us standing in the kitchen, and there was an island, counter, in the kitchen, and we're kind of like leaned up against it and kind of just, you know, shooting back and forth what we're thinking. And, we had our silverware thing that was in the drawer of the island thing, and it started rattling really, really heavily. And then we heard, footsteps, like running circles around the island and around us. And she immediately freaked out, my ex-wife, and, she had looked up this paranormal company that was relatively close to us. And I watched those shows and stuff just because, like I said, I'm fascinated in it. But it's like, not that I think that they're full of crap or anything, but I've got like a healthy skepticism, you know what I mean, if you will. And so it's just like, so this, you know, random paranormal company from 30 minutes down the road, like, they're going to be legit and everything, like, get out of here. But if it's going to make you feel better, then we can have them come out. So they did. And, you know, we met them and everything. And they said they were going to come back that weekend and do an overnight thing. But I remember them in the initial, like, introduction thing when they came to our house. Like, they set us down on the couch and took our picture, like, as a family. And then they were like, one of them leaned over and was like, oh, my God, look at this. It's like, what? Show us. And they wouldn't, which is like, okay, these guys are quacks. But then when they showed up, I was like, here's the thing, man, I don't mind you guys doing this, but I want to stay so I know that you're not full of crap. I want to be a part of it. And they was like, yeah, no problem. It's like, all right. So they set all their stuff up, and at the minute that they plugged everything in, everything just started going haywire. All their instruments and everything were just lighting up. They were getting EVPs and this and that. And so I was like, okay, you know, here we go. And I remember they were getting EVPs about this kid that had passed away, and saying that, like, let me out of the car and things like that. And, you know, where's, you know, my oldest son's name, you know, they're saying, you know, where's he, and things like that. So she had took the boys to stay at her mom and dad's for the night. She wanted no part of it. And she didn't tell, our oldest, you know, what was going on and what we were doing there at the house. But I remember, you know, before even getting them there, kind of backtracking a little bit, my cousin, we ended up finding out, knew that Corey kid that died. And she was telling me about him and everything, and that his brother took it really hard when Corey passed. And so at one point during the night, I said, I think his name was like Kevin or something like that. So, you know, do you want me to relay a message for Kevin and let him know you're okay? And it came back with F you on the EVP. Like when we played it back, it was just me and one other guy in the room. And when we played it back, I mean, it was like screaming F you at me the moment that I said, do you want me to tell Kevin that you're okay or give him a message? And so we caught that. And then there was a couple of EVPs where kind of the leader in the group, if you will, he was saying that, you know, this guy's ex-wife is really scared. She's wanting to move. And one of the EVPs said, good, get the F out. And so this went on all night. We got like video footage of my son was really into Ninja Turtles at the time. And he had one of like the Ninja Turtle shell shock vans or whatever. And we got video of it rolling across his bedroom floor. So there's several other things that were going on all night long. So they ended up leaving at like 3 or 4 in the morning. And I was left dealing with the aftermath of it. And as soon as they left, like I remember being just having this completely uneasy feeling. It was just like, I don't like this at all, man. Like I felt like I could feel something just in my face, and I didn't like it. And I remember calling her. It's like, yeah, please come back home. You know, like I think I was 25 at the time, maybe, and just being like, please come back home. I don't like this. I don't want to be here by myself. And but when they came home in the morning, like I remember going to bed at night, like grown man, 25 years old, like pulling the covers up over my head. It's like, I have never felt this uncomfortable in my life. And, like I said, man, I could just feel something like it was like right on top of me, right in my face. And, this was the night that I had my second and last, lucid dream. And for whatever reason, you know, I was talking to my mom and dad in the dream and was talking about the whole experience of the paranormal group being there. And as I'm talking to them in my dream, my phone rings and there's no number that pops up. It just says Corey. And I answer the phone and he's screaming at me like, how dare you? You're trying to get rid of me. You know, F you, get the F out of my house. It's my house. I'm not going anywhere. You're not going to like what happens next. And just screaming these things at me. And then, like, I remember waking up feeling like, oh, my God, you know, like he's pissed. This isn't going to be good. And my wife brought the boys home. And it was probably 9 or 10 in the morning. And the moment, like I said, our oldest son didn't know what we were doing. But as soon as he stepped foot through the front door, like he froze in the doorway and like he put like kind of shrugged his shoulders up and like closed his eyes. And I was like, yeah, hey, bud, like you okay? And he just like shook his head and he's like, Corey's mad at you, dad. He's like, what did you do? And that really freaked me out. But we ended up having to move out of there probably a few months later. And, but that was the only thing that's happened to the kids, but it was kind of freaky.
Yeah, absolutely freaky. And, you know, I'm sitting here listening to you share this story and you have this character named Corey. And I don't know, man, like, do you ever get the sense that Corey isn't the Corey that you found out that lived there, but maybe this was some kind of entity that was portraying itself? Because I mean, really, like if somebody dies and their spirit is, you know, haunting a location, do they develop red eyes? Do they become evil? I mean, it doesn't seem like this was something that was kind.
Yeah. And I remember talking to my cousin about it when she was telling me like she's always been fascinated by paranormal stuff too. So I would kind of talk to her about it. She knew what, you know, the activity and stuff that was going on in the house. And when I told her that, you know, we found out that this, you know, Corey, whatever his last name was, I want to say like Robertson or Robinson, something similar to that. So she was like, oh my God, I went to school with this kid. And she was like, he was a total sweetheart. Loved playing, you know, he was, you know, always playing with the kids in the neighborhood and everything like that. Huge into church, you know, one of the nicest kids you'd ever want to meet. Well, it's like, well, why is he presenting himself? If that's who it is, why is he presenting himself black with red eyes? And why would he not want me to have anything to do with my kid? Because like I said, man, he would shove me like backwards, like out of his room and slam the door and tell me, Corey does not want me in here.
Yeah, that's just disturbing. That's just disturbing. Yeah. Man, yeah. I'm glad that situation's over with. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. But outside of that, I mean, as far as like residential stuff, I haven't had any other hauntings. The only other time that I've experienced anything is my now wife and I, since we've been together, we go down to Waverly Hills once a year. And every time we've been down there, we've had an experience. The first time that we went, she kind of had more experiences than what I did. Her hair was pulled and there was an EVP that her mom had went with us that she had got where she was asking, you know, like, is there somebody here? You know, where are you? And it was saying, you know, by my wife's name, saying, you know, I'm by Michelle or next to Michelle. And it would pull her hair. And then the last time that we went, I had all the experiences. My shirt was pulled. There's one place down on the first floor where they said the kids used to like to play hide and seek. It was like in this old, like walk-in refrigerator, and they asked for volunteers, and my dumbass volunteered to go stand in there by myself. And, so I get in there and, as soon as I'm in there for maybe 10 seconds and I hear something shuffling behind me. And, next thing I know, like both arms of my shirt are being pulled and, you know, countless shadow figures and EVPs and things like that. But I mean, that's stuff we ask for, that we go pay for. So
right.
As far as residential stuff, you know, that's been about it.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, I do appreciate you sharing these stories and giving us an update on your experiences, you know, with the hypnosis and things like that. Dude, listen, if you come across any more information about things that you'd like to share, you have a green light to come on and share. It doesn't need to be an entire episode, even if it's just 10 minutes of just talking. If there's something that you would like to share, you have a green light to come contact me and come on the show.
All right, man. I appreciate that. We'll see if everything kind of stays died down and kind of blows over a little bit. And I may take you up on that.
All right, brother. Well, until next time, take care, man.
All right. You too, man.